As we are in the constant receipt of inquiries from friends at a distance, questions propounded to the controlling spirit of the seance, it may not be amiss to make a few plain statements with regard to the case in question. In the first place, it should be understood that these seances are not controlled at all times by the same spirit, but for each occasion an intelligence is selected best adapted to that occasion. Persons sending their inquiries from a distance do not seem to understand this, and they often inquire in regard to the difference of opinion that seems to find expression through the said controlling spirit of the circle. It should be understood that each distinct intelligence, or human spirit, retains its own special intellectual integrity after death as before. All are entitled to their own opinions and the expression of the same, if they express themselves at all. All questions relating to well-developed scientific facts will, without doubt, be answered by all intelligences coming here, in a similar manner. The idea will be one and the same, though the expression or clothing of the idea may be different in all. But with regard to all questions of theology, you must expect that each spirit will preserve his or her own opinions, and if questioned will give them according to their best ability so to do. Theology is but a vagary at best. It is founded upon speculation. It lives by speculation. It cannot by any possibility be demonstrated by science. As theology, it has no part with science. Science and it have never been married, and never will be, because theology, as understood in human life, is thoroughly at variance with science. Therefore, all questions propounded with regard to theology, of whatever caste or color, will be answered by the spirit controlling on the occasion as he understands it. The Catholic answers in his own way, the Protestant in his, the Mahometan in his, each in accordance with the theological light they have received. You make a very great mistake, oftentimes, in supposing the departed spirit to be possessed of an almost infinite amount of knowledge regarding all subjects. You forget that they are still human, bounded about by the conditions of human life. They are not infinite. They are finite still. And though their clairvoyance is largely unfolded in spirit life, yet it does not extend to infinity. It only reaches a very small degree into the future. It does not perceive all the past, neither does it all the future. It can take cognizance of events as they come within its sphere of action, but no farther. Now, then, consider the friends who come to you from the other life as human, fallible, and entitled, each one, to their own opinions. You gave them that liberty while they were in the mortal form, and if you are wise and just, you will give them no less now. Question. What is the medium of exchange in the spirit world? Or what is used there as our money is here? Answer. Merit, that which belongs to the inner life. Whatever you merit, you will have. There is no special medium of exchange that is equivalent to gold, silver, and greenbacks, in our life. You may be very sure of that. But there is a medium of exchange. If I have what I do not need, and my neighbor has need of it, I pass it to him. If he has what he does not need, and what I need, he passes it to me. There is a perpetual interchange of the good things of spirit life. None can retain any more than they have need of. A very hard place for misers to come to, particularly before they get rid of their miserly propensities, I assure you. So if you have any such, better get rid of them here. This was at page 278. By Reverend Joseph Lowenthal, May 4, 1869. Question. What is the cause of those ways of feeling that sometimes sweep over the soul, which can only find their appropriate expression in prayer, those intense, often unutterable desires for greater light, holiness, purity, closer communion, and more perfect assimilation with the spirit of all goodness? In other words, what is the spirit that prompts us to prayer? Answer. I believe that we are acted upon constantly by the great infinite spirit of nature, and when we feel in our souls that rising up, that spirit of prayer which would cause us to leave our darkness and enter light, then it is, I believe, that the Spirit of infinite goodness sheds holy dews upon us. We rise by temptation. We are tempted to leave the past perpetually. The soul feels that there is a better state of existence, and that it is an heir to that better state. It reaches out clairvoyantly and perceives the future, and being dissatisfied with the present because of the future, it holds up its hands in prayer to the great infinite Spirit, and thus comes nearer to that Spirit, comes into rapport with the higher good, leaves its present state of mentality, and rises, for the time being at least, to a higher state. It is, as one writer hath said, a key to heaven. Another hath said, a prayer is the wings of the angels. And another hath said, a it is the voice of God speaking to human hearts, and I believe it is. Question. When we thus pray, do we receive the things for which we ask? And may our friends be blessed with these same promptings and desires in answer to our prayers? Answer. It is a self-evident fact that we do not always receive the things for which we pray, but it is a self-evident fact, also, that we are made better by prayer. No one can ever give birth to a high and holy aspiration which is prayer, to me, but is made better for it. They rise in the scale of mind. They shed something of their darkness, and take on something of light. Question. What is the secret of the different degrees of faith we feel at different times, in regard to the bestowal of the blessings we seek? Answer. We are constantly being acted upon by all our surroundings, and because we are perpetually changing. Our mental state is constantly changing. We are sometimes full of faith, and sometimes where faith should be there is a vacuum. We act upon all other intelligences, and all other things, all other intelligences, act upon us. We are motes in the sunbeams of God's infinite power. We are sometimes here, and sometimes there. Sometimes the rays strike us perpendicularly, and sometimes aslant. We cannot always think alike. We cannot always act alike. Variety seems to be the order of change. No two expressions of a soul are exactly alike. No two things are exactly alike. Question. Does spirit power manifest itself by intense pain in the arms, and what is its object? Answer. Sometimes the action of a foreign spirit is manifested in that way. When spirits desire to come into rapport with media by writing, they sometimes seek to cut off the electrical flow that passes between the brain and the forearm, in order that they may use that limb without using the brain. When this is done, it is very apparent to produce a heavy, dull pain. At other times, when a spirit acts upon the arm in connection with the brain, there is a sharp, quick pain. And it is produced by a foreign electrical force passing through the nerves coming in contact with that which is legitimate to the individual. Do you understand? I do, by John Pierpont, May 6, 1868. Question. What is the peculiar principle, or attribute, in the human soul, as distinguished from a lower organization, upon which we predicate immortal existence? Answer. Divine aspiration and divine inspiration. We do not find the brute creation aspiring to anything higher. We do not find that they can be inspired with divine things. They live in the sphere of their brute life. They do not ask to go beyond it. But the human soul is never satisfied. When it has attained one heaven, it asks for another still better, by Theodore Parker, May 10, 1869. Question. I once heard a Swedenborgian preacher say that there were in the spirit world mountains, hills, rivers, bones, blood, digestion, nerves, brain, hands, feet, and sea, and that the ground, in the spirit world, is just as solid to the tread of spirit feet, as the ground in earth life is to us. Is the above true? Answer. It certainly is absolutely, positively true. Question. You mean the blood and bones? Answer. I certainly mean just that. Question. Are those who are slaves to circumstances in this life, likewise fettered in spirit life? Answer. To a certain extent they are. You are not ushered into a state of perfect happiness at death. The other life finds you precisely where this life leaves you. You are surrounded oftentimes in the spirit world by conditions that seem to be adverse to your happiness. You struggle against them, and in struggling you grow strong. 281 For my own part, I would not wish to live in a world where there was nothing but ease and quiet comfort. I should lose my strength. I should take on weakness. We only know of the better good by comparing it with the lesser good. If we had no mental storms, no dark hours, wherein our spirits were bathed with dews of unhappiness, we should hardly know how to appreciate an opposite condition. Supposing we had all peace and joy, would we be satisfied with that forever? I think not. We are so constituted spiritually, as well as physically, that we have need to meet with opposites. We cannot exist only as we exist between two opposites. They play upon us alternately, and in consequence of that alternate play, we live and move and have our being. We have need of the shadow, we have need of the joy, and for my part one thank God that we have them both. Question. Are we tormented in spirit life by persecution and slander? Answer. Not precisely as you are, because society is differently organized in the spirit world from what it is here. To a certain extent it may resemble it, but it is much superior to society here. A man or woman in the spirit world is known for precisely what they are, nothing more. The slanderer wears the garb of the slanderer, the peacemaker wears the garb of the peacemaker. The fashions, so far as external adornment is concerned, originate in the inner life. That is the grand Paris of the spirit world. You may be assured that you will all get your annual fashion plates. You won't have to purchase them. They come to you. Question. Are not those who are wealthy and at their ease in this life, and thereby possess the means of improving their social, moral, and intellectual faculties and relations, 282 much more advanced in spirit life than the poor, who through poverty and adverse surroundings lead the life of deprivation and unhappiness? Answer. No, by no means. Jesus, the sage and philosopher, was poor. He went about with poor raiment, and without scrip, not even the poor kind that you have today. And if we are to take his condition as an example, surely we cannot reckon much upon happiness as accruing to us as spirits from riches, the riches of this world. Why, I have seen the richest spirit being resurrected from a form that had not enough of this world's goods to hold it and the spirit in unison, therefore the separation came. And again, I have seen poor spirits coming from robes of purple and fine linen. They had no garment to cover their nakedness in the spirit world. Oh, you must not measure happiness by riches. If you do, you will make a very great mistake. By William E. Channing, May 31, 1869. Question. Is it wise for mortals here to consult with spirits on questions of a purely business nature? Is their advice likely to be valuable? And can we trust it more than the advice of mortals on the earth? Answer. There are a large class of spirits freed from the mortal form who are intensely interested in the business of this physical life. They find their heaven here, and are never more happy than when acting out the desires or peculiar conditions in which they find themselves placed. They are attracted to your business sphere. They have never been cut loose from it. They revolve in it as motes revolve in the sunshine, and under favorable conditions they may be good advisers to those who dwell in mortal, because they can see farther than mortals can. They can reach the thoughts of your friends, of your enemies, can see their secret motives, can understand what they intend to do, what moves they intend to make in life, while you, with your human senses shrouded by mortality, might not be able to determine concerning the thoughts that might be revolving in the brain of your neighbor, they might be able to determine concerning all. And yet it would be poor counsel to advise that you lay down your own powers of perception at the feet of any spirit, in or out of the body. Advice is most excellent, But it is not always well to appropriate to our own use all the advice that may be given us, whether it comes from the world of spirits out of the body or in the body. There are some minds who consider it very impious to call upon spirits to aid them in the things of this life. That is a mistake. Since they move in that sphere yet, it is not at all unright to call upon them to act for you. But again I say, have a care how you lay down your own power, how you fail to use your talents when you have them, but are ready to use those that belong to another. By Reverend Finiasto, June 1, 1869. Question. Can mankind be spiritualized much in advance of material surroundings? If not, ought not those surroundings to be improved, as a first step towards enlightened spiritual revelations? Answer. Spirit, even while it struggles in the womb of matter, causes that matter to grow, to unfold, to become more perfect. It is no use to deny that we are influenced for good, or for what men call evil, by our surroundings. Place the criminal in beautiful and harmonious conditions, give unto that spirit that which will satisfy it, take it away from its haunts of vice, surround it with beauty, make all things that the eye rests upon appeal to its sense of beauty, and what will be the result? Why, in my opinion, the criminal will be such no longer. It is only the hard conditions of unfortunate human experience that make your criminals. Take them away from these, and the divinity of their spirits shows itself, even through the crudity of human life. Question. According to the doctrine of the Church of which I am a member, if a family in this world do not live rightly, if certain members go astray here, when they go into the spirit world they will be separated. Is this true? Answer. There is a spiritual affinity binding soul to soul that cannot be infringed upon. If the members composing your family are spiritually attracted to each other, no power in all the universe can prevent them from meeting and associating with each other after death. They will as naturally gravitate together as a ball will fall to the earth, if dropped from the hand of the holder. Nature, nature's God, hath made wise provision for us all. Sin, or the mistakes which we may make in life, will have nothing to do with our being kept apart, or attracted together, if there is a soul affinity, drawing soul to soul, that is blessed by God, which no power can separate. There are many mothers in the soul world who are not attracted to their offspring. They give birth only to the body, and not to the soul. This may seem a strange assertion, but it is true. And again, there are souls that never met in this life, that are attracted together by a subtle law that binds them, whether they will or no. This is the power of God, working through intelligence. Those families that are grouped together in spiritual life here, will be grouped together in spiritual life in the hereafter. But if the reverse, they will be as widely separated as the planets are widely separated from each other. By Theodore Parker, June 3, 1869. Question. Is life, or that principle of vital activity which is manifested through the human organism, spirit? If not, what is it leaves the body at death? Answer. Spirit I define as something undiscernible by human sense, something which no living soul can measure or analyze. I define life to be, so far as we understand it, a manifestation of spirit. Those things which our senses perceive, recognize, are the things of life. All living things, every one of them, not one dead, and they are all manifestations of spirit. That subtle power that defies the scalpel, and passes out of the body at the change called death, I believe to be spirit, co-eternal with the God spirit, and part and portion of the divine life, such a part as that divine life saw fit to exercise over humanity. You call it the spirit of man, the soul of man or woman. It matters not by what term it is recognized. It is the one spirit, the infinite, all-pervading, a something indestructible, without creation and without end. Question. You consider all spirit immortal? Answer. I do, most certainly. And I have most ample proofs that it is all immortal. Question. then animals are not at death swept into a grand chaos, the great mass of spirit, to be again worked over into some other form? Answer. By no means. Here is the rock of form, upon which all classes of theological scientists split, and many of them founder, the rock of form, supposing that the form we have or behold today will exist forever, that the immortality rests with that, is dependent upon that. By no means is it. Forms are constantly changing, as spirit has need of higher instruments through which to express itself. The instrument is made better. How is it with regard to the flowers? They are not today what they were years ago. And why not? Because the God that was within them called upon the God that was within the human intellect, and said, "Come, intelligence, shed your dews upon me, act upon me, bring me into a higher form of good." What was the result? Why, the husbandman went to work to make more beautiful flowers, to add new hues to their fair faces, to make more beautiful their forms, to change for the better the rose and lily, not at all infringing upon nature or nature's God. Immortality does not call upon the form for its power. By no means. Forms must change. You have evidence of that every day of your lives. But the immortality that belongs to the form is immortal forever and forever. There is no sudden change of those forms, but a gradual growth. If the change was sudden, it would produce too great a shock in the realm of intelligence, therefore it is very slow, comes as you are prepared for it. The years throw their snows upon your brows as you are prepared to receive them, just so fast, and no faster. Question. If spirit is not matter, is all spirit the same, that is, equally advanced or perfect? If so, what benefit is derived from its manifestation through matter? Answer. That spirit is not matter, matter is every day proving. But that spirit is inseparably connected with matter, matter is also every day proving. Matter is the expression of spirit, not the spirit, the outer bark, there. Foliage. The branches, not the inner, invisible life. What the advantage? Why, all intelligence can answer that question as well as we can. Of what advantage is it to you of this age that you have greater light than they who lived ages before you did? Since you require greater light, certainly it is for your advantage to have it. All the expressions of spirit through matter are not only an advantage to matter, but is also to intelligence. To that subtle force that expresses itself through the human brain, and says, "Behold, this is very beautiful or very grand." The world of matter was made for the world of intelligence. When you keep this in your mind, you will hardly wonder that matter changes its form. Question. Is the spirit of the infant an emanation from that of the parent? And, if so, is the spirit of the parent less an individualized entity? Or does it suffer any diminution or disarrangement in its powers? Answer. The infant is physically a physiological result of the parent's life, but spiritually it is not. It is a spirit independent of either father or mother, you may be sure of this. It is from God, the great spirit, the father and mother, the whole, the universal life. Question. If the spirit of the infant is not an emanation from that of the parent, whence does it originate? At what period during the incubation does it take possession of the human organism? Answer. At conception. By Theodore Parker, June 7, 1869. Question. Can you describe the separation term death from your side? Answer. At death, the law of attraction begins to cease between the particles composing the physical body. They grow less and less active. Their power passes off, and takes on a purely electrical form. All the forces of the body slowly pass out when this disintegration commences. Clairvoyance can behold them, and describes them as a mist, sometimes as a halo, sometimes as a smoke floating out of the form, generally forming the most dense cloud from the brain. Nature seems to gather all her forces together in the brain at the last extremity, and the last magnetic vital force that exists in the body exists in the heart and brain. When this is no more, then the whole body is pervaded with the electrical force. There is an entire absence of the magnetic, and the spirit cannot hold connection with the body after all the magnetic force has retired. The spirit passes out of the body. When the last particle of magnetic force goes, the spirit goes with it, and not till then. Sometimes when you call a person dead, when you say the body has parted from the spirit, it is not always so. There may be an appearance of death, when the spirit may be strongly attached to the body still. But after the last magnetic life is gone, then the electrical force is predominant, and the work of change commences at once. It is, under natural circumstances, not at all painful. It is quite unlike what you have supposed it to be. But when the change comes in consequence of violence to any part, or in consequence of violent disease which is not in the order of nature, then there is pain attendant upon the disease. But when death comes naturally, as it should did you all live in accordance with nature's laws, there would be no pain. The passage would be easy and pleasant, attended with no fear, but with a certain joy that freedom only can bestow upon the spirit. This was at page 289. Question. How long does the separation take? Answer. That depends upon the natural magnetic vitality of the individual, or, in other words, upon their tenacity to physical life. By Father Henry Fitz-James, June 8, 1869. Question. I have been searching and investigating this spiritual philosophy for nearly 20 years, have taken the banner of light at various times and places, obtained subscribers for the same, feeling that in due time I would get some message from a departed friend. I have lost many and very dear friends, one of whom passed away 2 years ago, with a promise to me that, if it was possible, he would return and give me some test by which I could recognize him, and as he knew Mrs. Conant personally, the test might possibly come through her mediumship, but I get nothing, either from him or any other friend. Now, the question is, and it is asked by thousands, I only ask to have it answered philosophically, why I get no message, while every paper is replete with messages that we know nothing of. Answer. Christ came to save that which had need of salvation, or, as the record hath it, he came to seek and to save that which was lost. The object of these seances is not to convince those who are already convinced, is not to bring proof to those who have already more than they can well digest. The object is to bring it to those who might remain in spiritual darkness for a long time, did the light not come to them from this source. 7 out of every 10 of all the messages that are received at this place go to those who have little knowledge of the spiritual phenomenon. Consequently, they are silent upon the subject when they receive their messages. But their work is accomplished, the seed is sown, and the harvest is just as sure to come as is the harvest to the husbandman here in vegetative life. The spirit world is constantly in receipt of urgent desires on the part of friends here, for their friends in spirit to return through this avenue. But since, should their call be considered and spiritually attended to, others who have greater need would be shut out for a time, it is deemed the better course to let those who are not hungry remain without the loaf. Those whose spiritual gardens are already blooming with flowers and green with leaves, the angel passes over them with a silent blessing, and stops only upon those desert places where the earth is ready for seed, and where none has been sown. It would be well for your correspondent to address a note to the spirit in question, seal it satisfactorily, and send it to this place, and see what will come of it. In all probability, some answer will be given. Question. If the Indian is hereafter to enjoy his hunting grounds, will there not be something for him to hunt? And does not this involve suffering, and even death? The idea of suffering and death, in such a sense, and in such a condition or state, is revolting to my mind. Are these statements to be taken literally or figuratively? Will you enlighten? Answer. They are not figurative expressions. By no means. We mean that they shall be literally understood. When the Indian tells you that he has hunting grounds in the spirit land, he tells you what is true. If he has hunting grounds, that presupposes that he has something to hunt.